Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sung Yoon Lee, who is a professor of international affairs at the Fletcher School at Tufts University, a National Asia Research Fellow, and an associate in research at the Korea Institute at Harvard University. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sung Yoon Lee.
Thank you for having me.
And I believe you've just been in South Korea, and I understand that the South Korean intelligence agency have just come out with leaks, or perhaps this comes from a leak of a parliamentarian who was briefed by the South Korean intelligence service, who, by the way, did release the information that that the uncle of the new leader Kim Jong-un had fallen from grace. Before the North Koreans had made the announcement, they're saying that this is all about a business-related dispute that Jang apparently refused an order from Kim to solve this dispute. Is that possibly what's behind his execution?
Well, the South Korean chief spy agency, when it announced Chang Sung-taek's purge early this month, December 3rd, it proved its viability, its raison d'etre to the South Korean people and to the world because its assessment proved to be true, despite many charges of conspiracy theory, even from South Korea's left, and a lot of skepticism. So, yes, South Korean spy agency's announcement is to be taken quite seriously. Now, on the fine matter of whether this was a political purge with the primary purpose of eliminating Uncle Chang, who Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader, saw as a prime threat to himself, or whether this dismissal and swift execution of Uncle Chang was the result of some financial bickering or conflicting interests related to financial matters, I think the difference is not all that telling, because when you consider the absolutely theatrical, cruel manner in which Uncle Jang, the number two man in North Korean politics for so long, when this execution was so swiftly executed, if you will, you have to draw the conclusion that Kim Jong-un wanted to make a point. And in any purge, there is the secondary purpose of that theatrical, dramatic, demonstrative effect, instilling fear in all others who would harbor illusions of building a power base. So I think Uncle Jang probably stepped over the line and came across to the top leader as a potential threat, and that's the primary reason that he was executed.
But didn't what happened, though, undermine the whole mystique of this divine rule of this dynastic family, almost, you know, infallible, like the Pope is supposed to be, the idea that they've revealed disharmony in the very top family?
Absolutely, you're right. You know, whatever the future fate of the man on top in a totalitarian system, the life of the number two man is often short and precarious. So the fact that the number two man was abruptly dismissed like this comes as no surprise. At the same time, North Korea did something unwittingly, something unprecedented in actually kindly explaining to the world why it, the state, went after Chang Sung-taek in such a manner and killed him off, even talking of a plot for a coup d'etat. And that unwittingly reveals chinks in the North Korean armor. As you say, the North Korean leadership is viewed as a deity. He is infallible. He is almost omnipotent. And I think the brash manner in which Kim Jong-un resolved this issue, if you will, reveals at the very least that Kim Jong-un feels confident, he is brash, he is impetuous, and perhaps prone to making miscalculation in the future, whether it's on managing court intrigue or foreign policy, because, exactly because, now he feels emboldened. He probably inhabits a virtual reality in which he is semi-divine and infallible, and that is a recipe for a serious mistake down the road.
Again, I'm speaking with Sung-Yoon Lee, who is a professor of international affairs at the Fletcher School at Tufts University, a National Asia Research Fellow, and an associate in research at the Korea Institute at Harvard University. Well, that's the part that concerns me, and that's one of the reasons I was calling you, was because quite often the way that dictators solve, not that this public opinion has any voice or any power in North Korea, but still the idea that that he's shaken the regime and terrified everybody under him, that makes perfect sense. But another tool often used is to distract people from failures at home by adventures abroad. And they periodically make these threats of war. So there are two. That's the first question. Why don't you address that one? Because is it likely that he is now going to strike out if he's either delusional about his divine rule, or he feels the need to consolidate his power further?
Well, Kim Jong-un does have a lot to prove. Like many unqualified inheritors of great fortune and power, Kim Jong-un is terribly spoiled. His grandfather, the founder of the North Korean state, had actually been an anti-Japanese resistance guerrilla in the 1930s and 40s. So Kim, the founder of the dynasty, brought some revolutionary credentials to the table. And his late father, who died 2 years ago, although he was a princeling himself, nonetheless, he had 20 years of apprenticeship under his own father, Kim Il-sung. So Kim Jong-un was thrust into this position in the wake of his father suffering a stroke in August 2008 and his eventual death in late 2011. So he has a lot to prove. He's inexperienced. He is young. I think there is a good chance that Kim Jong-un would lash out at South Korea in early part of 2014, but not necessarily because of this political purge, but because that's been the pattern: controlled, limited attacks against South Korea and provocations in the form of weapons tests. Over the past dozen years, there are some exceptions when North Korea lashed out in the second half of the calendar year, notably when it conducted its first nuclear test in 2006, and also when it shelled a South Korean inhabited island in 2010, and also last year when North Korea conducted a long-range missile test in mid-December. But those were banner years when Kim Jong-un was being beefed up as the next leader, and 2012 was also a banner year. It marked the 100th anniversary of the founder of the dynasty. So my point is, it's been North Korea's strategy to raise the stakes, remind the world, its more powerful neighbors in the region, that it is a political factor to be taken seriously, and the primary way to do that is to cause trouble, and then try to return to negotiations and reap concessions. So I think that likelihood is quite high.
So what do you make then of the fact that the uncle who Kim Jong-un executed and publicly humiliated before he executed him and revealed, as you said, perhaps unwittingly, that in mentioning a coup and mentioning corruption, etc., my understanding is that the uncle was close to the Chinese. And there's of course, a lot of cross-border economic activity in China, with China. And these latest reports from South Korean intelligence say that the disputes that the uncle was supposed to mediate that he failed to do, which led to his death, were related to coal, which, of course, North Korea exports to China, and other heavy industry. So is this another case of the regime shooting itself in the foot? If their only sponsor, the Chinese, presumably were close to the uncle who was executed, they can't be too happy with this turn of events.
I'm sure the Chinese are displeased, but the Chinese have been displeased with North Korea repeatedly over the past 60 years. And each time, even in cases of blatant insult against China, China just grit its teeth, held its nose, and kept subsidizing North Korea out of strategic interests. So I don't think this is going to shift China's fundamental policy toward North Korea or the Korean Peninsula. money matters, we know, in any system, in democracy and totalitarian system alike. There is rampant corruption within the North Korean system, and Uncle Chang indeed oversaw many of the nation's financial projects with China and others. So I'm speculating, but I think it's a reasonable assumption that Uncle Chang amassed a political fortune, not only political fortune, but a financial fortune for himself, and defied Kim Jong-un in some way, and that led to Kim Jong-un acting so swiftly to remove him from power.
So, but how do you explain this peculiar family dynasty's behavior in executing the uncle, who's the number two guy, who was the mentor, who supposedly behind the scenes orchestrated the ascension of the youngest brother, Kim Jong-un, over the others, and the fact that the older brother is apparently a kind of playboy and a wastrel living, I think, in Macau, gambling down there. And he was involved in all kinds of shady counterfeiting $100 bills and drug deals and all kinds of stuff. So I don't understand. I mean, maybe it's impossible to understand why it is he's not executed and the other guy is, you know.
Well, the elder brother from a different mother is basically, he's been ostracized for more than a dozen years. So he poses no real threat to Kim Jong-un in the short term or in the long term. Now, all those charges levied against Uncle Chang, leading a promiscuous life, womanizing, leading an extravagant life, depraved life, and so forth, being a drug user and so forth. Now, all those charges could, if you just switch the subject with Kim family for Uncle Chang, all those charges could apply to the founder of the North Korean state, Kim II, and the current leader, Kim III. But the important thing here is that North Korea is a cult-driven dynasty like no other. It is the world's sole communist hereditary dynasty, the most cultish, the most totalitarian system that the world has ever seen. And any semblance of challenge, any hint of a power base that is being built under the number two man, that is a serious threat to the regime, and it needs to be resolved. The sad thing is, the life of the number two man in a totalitarian system, unlike in a democracy where you have a deputy prime minister or vice president, he poses no threat to the leader. But in a totalitarian system, the number two man can only go down, and he is often viewed as a potential threat. And we see many instances in the former Soviet Union after Stalin's death, in the People's Republic of China under Mao Zedong, and in North Korea of swift removals of the number two man.
But the Korean expert in South Korea, Brian Myers, his analysis is somewhat different from yours. You refer to it as a communist state, with the only communist dynasty. He likens the North Korean regime more to Imperial Japan before World War II, the emperor worship. It's more right-wing than left-wing. What do you make of that?
Well, North Korea is a hodgepodge of a lot of things. Stalinism, Confucianism, the imperial cult of Japan, obviously Stalinism. And yes, Professor Myers is one of the most astute observers of North Korea. But I think North Korea is an amalgamation of all these things. So, yes, there are contradictions. North Korea is ultra-right-wing, fascist even, ultra-nationalistic, xenophobic, jingoistic state, not interested in spreading its ideology all that much beyond its borders. So in that sense, it is not, properly speaking, communist. But while appellations are important for our analysis of North Korea, I think we can agree that there are remnants of various ideological sources in the North Korean cultish leadership. And one of those is that North Korea is a hereditary, as it says, a communist state. North Korea removed the word communism from its constitution a few years ago in 2009. Yet in the most important document of the state, which is the protocol, the charter to the Korean Workers' Party, that word is still there. And the Workers' Party, of course, that connotation comes from communism.
Well, just in the last minute, Sung-Yoon Lee, do you think then that there will be something? You were saying that there'll be a crisis ginned up in the coming year, in January, but it will be orchestrated and limited and business as usual and a part of this pattern of creating problems and then extorting rewards.
Right. I think we can say that Kim Jong-un is not suicidal. He may be a lot of things, but he's not suicidal. And we, of course, your listeners remember the long barrage of bluster against South Korea and the U.S. earlier this year. It lasted for over 2 months with threats of even nuclear strike against Washington and Seoul. Over the past 6 years, North Korea has engaged in literally countless provocations and deadly attacks against U.S. forces in South Korea and against ROK, South Korean troops and civilians. And not once did North Korea pay any kind of penalty. Not once was there military retaliation by South Korea and the U.S. So I think Kim Jong-un can feel relatively secure that he can get away with another controlled, limited attack to raise the stakes once again. But I doubt he would be so bold as to launch a general war, which would lead to his own demise.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Sung-Yoon Lee.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Sung-Yoon Lee, who's a professor of international affairs at the Fletcher School at Tufts University, a National Asia Research Fellow, and an associate in research at the Korea Institute at Harvard University. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.